here from UKLFI, threatening consequences if they did not comply. As Israel commits its war crimes, more and more people see, but this brave bunch of barristers are gonna keep the world free. The list of their accomplishments are right there in black and white. They take credit openly. Right there on their website, if you get kicked off of PayPal, GoFundMe, or Facebook, they probably brag about it. Go and take a look. Anyone who calls out Israel as a fascist state, if they get any attention, they can expect to meet their fate, lose their jobs, have lies and slander spread about their name. Canceling careers, that's the name of the solicitor's game. UK Lawyers for Israel intends to turn the tide, to advocate for the state committing genocide. If you cry out against the slaughter, that could be their cue. Their next target might be you. You can see it on their website. Their email list is tiny, but they can compensate in cash for what they lack in popularity. And their legal threats aren't limited just to the UK. Wherever someone supports Palestine, they've got something to say. If it's a gathering in Glasgow or a conference in Berlin, these livid lawyers will make sure that censorship will win. They've even got a charity and a troll farm too. And they don't care if you're a Christian, a Muslim, or a Jew. UK Lawyers for Israel intends to turn the tide, to advocate for the state committing genocide. If you cry out against the slaughter, that could be their cue. Their next target might be you. They took the Labour Party, centered it in their sights, and accused all the best of them of being anti-Semites. They took the best professors and they got them fired. They took former Supreme Court judges, said that they were liars. If you're afraid to speak out, the roots of that fear may result from a campaign intended to create that atmosphere. If you're feeling threatened, the reason why could just be the lords and ladies of UKLFI. UK Lawyers for Israel intends to turn the tide, to advocate for the state committing genocide. If you cry out against the slaughter, that could be their cue. Their next target might be you. I woke up one morning with an email in my inbox.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, following the UN Security Council's quashing of the full membership resolution for Palestine, an emboldened Israel accelerated its genocide campaign against the captive Gaza, and though famine and disease threaten, and the entire strip is being subject to land, sea, and air bombardment, the international community has proven yet unable to either stop the onslaught or get adequate food and other aid to the people there. But not everyone is waiting for the UN or international community to act. Activist, journalist, and lawyer Dimitri Lascaris has joined the Gaza Freedom Flotilla 2024 in Turkey, where the three-ship-strong contingent has expedited its departure to, quote, meet the profound and urgent needs of Gaza's civilian population. But there are forces exerting pressure to prevent the ship sailing, as no doubt there will be the same, trying to arrest the completion of their humanitarian mission. Dimitri's articles and recent video reports from the Middle East are available at his site, dimitrilascaris.org, and his interviews for TRNN can be found at therealnews.com. Welcome back to the program, Dimitri.
Hi, Chris. Good to talk to you again.
Well, it's always great to have you on. Dimitri, tell me, where are you? When you look out the window of where you are now, what are you looking at?
I'm right in the heart of Istanbul, and across the street is collection of sort of merchant shops, but if I go up on my roof, I can see the Bosphorus. Not too far from, I mean, everything in central Istanbul is pretty much, you know, adjacent to the Bosphorus, but it's quite a city, and you could tell by walking the streets here that it is being affected by the tensions in the region.
Yeah, well, it is fraught right now. I imagine, even though you're there in this one of the world's great cities, you're still watching what's going on this side of the Atlantic. It's like 1968 all of a sudden on the university campuses in the United States. Not so much so in Canada, but violence has broken out. Are people in Turkey cognizant of what's going on in the United States around the Palestine issue, and especially with these riots going on, these police riots going on campuses?
I think the whole region is very cognizant. You know, I follow on Telegram a number of West Asian-based anti-imperialist channels, and they are regularly commenting on what's going on. I too see similarities. You know, I'm old enough, although I wasn't old enough to participate in the Vietnam War protests. I was just a young boy at the time. I do remember them. I remember how they affected American society and to a lesser degree Canadian society. But I also remember, Chris, something which is much more recent, and that was the Occupy Wall Street protests, which I was old enough to participate in, and I did participate in them extensively, including going to Zuccotti Park, where the Occupy Wall Street movement was born, 3 or 4 days before the cops moved in and shut it down brutally. And I think people should draw their inspiration, young people especially, from the Vietnam War protests. They should study them, understand the critically important role they played in bringing the Vietnam War to an end. But they should also remember that in this most recent uprising of popular anger against the elites, and I'm talking, of course, of Occupy Wall Street, they were shut down effectively after there was a sort of just a wave of police brutality, and the movement went away and never really resurfaced. It kind of, you know, found other ways to express itself. Its energy was channeled into other avenues, but as a movement, it disappeared. I don't think that's going to happen this time for a couple of reasons. One is the youth are, you know, particularly energetic. Once they get riled up, whereas Occupy Wall Street was more of a more mature sort of constituency, the young people here are showing tremendous energy. But the other thing is, you know, in Occupy Wall Street, we had difficulty identifying exactly who was the villain and drawing between the crony capitalist class and the suffering of the people in the street. Those of us who, you know, thought a lot about these things, we could see the connections, but they weren't obvious. Here, you're watching every day images of children being obliterated, children emaciated, homes being destroyed, mosques, universities, mass graves at hospitals. These images are seared onto the minds of the public. So I don't think that this movement will suffer the fate of Occupy Wall Street, but I think it is a cautionary tale that people should pay careful attention to and not forget it.
Well, 2011, that when Occupy got off the ground, that was concurrent with the Arab Spring. The Arab Spring, we saw the huge demonstrations in Tahrir Square in Egypt. Egypt right now is policing the Rafah Gate. They have been for many years now, starving Gaza. You're in Istanbul not to take in the sights, but you're there with the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. Do you want to talk about, for those that haven't, you and I talked about this some months ago when you were on a different leg of this effort. Do you want to explain briefly what this is for those that haven't been following?
Beginning in 2008, a couple of years after Israel began its suffocating siege of Gaza, humanitarian activists from around the world mounted a flotilla carrying humanitarian aid to Gaza. And they managed in 2008 to reach the shores of Gaza with relatively limited quantities of humanitarian aid. In 2010, when they came back with much larger cargo, 6 ships, including the flagship Mavi Marmara, the Mavi Marmara was stormed by Israeli commandos, and they murdered in cold blood 10 humanitarian activists. Since then, the general practice, there have been numerous attempts since 2010. The general practice of the Israeli military has been not to kill people because the 2010 massacre generated a gigantic uproar. especially with Turkey, many of whose citizens, you know, most of the citizens who were killed were Turkish citizens. And by the way, I believe an American was also murdered by the Israelis in that massacre. But what they've done is they have seized the vessel in international waters. They kidnap. And by the way, that's piracy. They have no authority whatsoever to seize a humanitarian vessel in international waters. They kidnap the passengers and the crew. Even though they had no intention or desire to go into Israel, they forced them to into Israel. Their goal is to get into Gaza, which is not Israel. It's occupied Palestinian territory. And once they're in there, they interrogate them. They imprison them for several days. They steal their personal effects, and then they deport them, which effectively means the legal proceeding, which effectively means that they can't return to Israel for all practical purposes. This particular voyage, who knows, Chris? You know, we saw what they did to the World Central Kitchen workers. They hunted them down like wretched animals and murdered them. You know, last year they killed Shireen Abu Akleh, an American Palestinian journalist with a major news organization, Al Jazeera. No one was held accountable. I don't know. I don't think anybody who's getting on that vessel knows with any confidence whether the Israelis are going to use their more recent approach or whether they're going to go back to the savagery of 2010.
Well, and not being allowed back in Israel automatically means you're not going to ever get access to the West Bank or certainly Gaza. Again, are there Palestinian nationals, to use the phrase, on board with you on this trip?
There are people of Palestinian origin, yes, from all over the world. But they have, I don't know them all. There's quite a few of them. But I think most of them, if not all of them, have citizenship from another country. So although I'm sure it would be extremely painful for them to be barred from returning to their homeland and a grotesque injustice, they're not going to be stateless if, in fact, they are deported.
Well, now, I know there's a lot of details about this ship that you can't talk about right now, but what is the plan upon reaching Gaza? There was a lot of talk about this American port, something that Sarah Wilkinson calls the death port. What's the plan at the other end? Should the Israelis not, the Navy, not intercept?
If we get to the shores of Gaza?
Yeah, or wherever you're bound for.
Well, if we get to the shores of Gaza, we're going to be elated because we'll be delivering hundreds of tons of desperately needed humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza. I mean, that's I don't think there could possibly be a better outcome, and we would all be ecstatic. And, you know, we don't exclude that possibility altogether. Who knows? Maybe. I mean, I can tell you that they are, without getting into too many of the details, that Israel and its Western backers are pulling out every conceivable stop to prevent the ships from leaving. So they don't want to have a confrontation on the high seas. That's absolutely clear. They don't want to have a confrontation with this flotilla anywhere. Israel right now is running up the flagpole, this deranged narrative that it actually, you know, is delivering adequate quantities of humanitarian aid to the Palestinian people. It's going to be much more difficult for them to sustain that narrative if they are seen to be blocking activists from delivering hundreds of tons of humanitarian aid to Gaza through a peaceful charitable mission. So I think that they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And if we get out of here, if we manage to leave the Turkey's territorial waters, safely navigate through the territorial waters of Greece, which could in and of itself pose problems given the behavior in the past of the Greek government. Assuming we managed to navigate through all of those enormous Western naval vessels in the Eastern Mediterranean, one or more of which might try to stop us, it may be that at the 11th hour, the Israelis are going to let us through. I don't think that's likely, but I think it's not inconceivable.
Well, as of right now, the Israeli government is saying that they are determined to start this long-promised invasion of Rafah. there are bombings from the air, bombings from the ground, and bombings from the sea by the military against different areas of Gaza, going on as though no international ruling has occurred against Israel. You're a lawyer, Dimitri. What does this say for the prospect of international law? You talk about piracy on the high seas. Clearly, Israel is a scofflaw in all regards.
Well, the law is, you know, the international legal architecture, while far from perfect, is sufficient to address the genocide that is happening in Gaza. The problem is not the substantive law itself. The problem is the absence of an effective enforcement mechanism. You know, imagine in Canada if we had courts ruling judgments and there were no police to enforce them. There were no banks that linked to comply, for example, when they say, well, you know, you have to, you know, that we're entering a judgment against this corporation for $1 million. And, you know, if they don't pay, we're going to garnish their bank accounts. And the banks say, well, to hell with you. We don't care. What would happen? There would be chaos potentially in Canada. Well, that's the situation that exists internationally. Primary reason for this is the veto power of five permanent members of the Security Council, and especially the three Western members, the United States, Britain, and France. They are stopping, and they have repeatedly stopped, any meaningful action from being taken to enforce the judgment, the January 26, 2024 judgment of the International Court of Justice.
And that court said that Israel must cease its onslaught and allow humanitarian aid, as you guys are trying to provide, into Gaza. The Rafah crossing could be open tomorrow. There's hundreds of trucks filled with food and medicines and other things needed that could roll in and be in Rafah within hours from now. And yet that isn't happening. I'm wondering what kind of a stress, thinking of the Arab Spring, thinking of President Sisi, and the kind of stress that President Erdogan is on in Turkey, how much they can, these leaders can bear. Is there a sense in Turkey that the people there are willing to take to the streets as they are in the university towns of the United States?
Well, there have been, they're here, I haven't had the opportunity yet to visit them, but there have been daily protests in the, I believe it's called the Sultan Ahmed Square in central Istanbul. I know this through other participants in the Freedom Flotilla. I just haven't been able to make it there during the hours it's been taking place. When I around the time that I arrived here on Monday, the flotilla participants, frustrated with you know, the obstructionism of the Turkish government, they themselves began to protest. I believe they went to the U.S. embassy, and a number of them were arrested. They were released ultimately. As far as I know, none of them was actually charged with any kind of an offense, but they were effectively warned that if they continued protesting, they could be facing some kind of charges and potentially, you know, be deported from the country. So there's plenty. And I should also say that in the recent local elections, Erdogan's party took a drubbing. People were a bit surprised by that. And I spoke to a local activist here, a Turkish activist, who said that there was an Islamist party that had virtually no public support, and it surged to 6% of the popular vote in the local elections, in large part because it was vociferously criticizing Erdogan for paying mere lip service to the human rights of the Palestinian people. All these fiery speeches that he's given have been music to the ears of, you know, the Turkish electorate. But a lot of them are waking up to the fact that this man really hasn't done much of anything to defend the Palestinian cause. And what's really problematic now for Erdogan is that Iran, you know, Turkey's rival in West Asia, principal rival for leadership of the Ummah, of the Muslim community, now looks, you know, relative to Turkey and its government, like a heroic nation, because it actually attacked Israel after its consulate was demolished in violation of international law in Damascus, and it showed that it can penetrate not only Israel's air defenses, but the supplementary air defenses offered up by the United States, Britain, France, and Jordan. It can basically hit anything it wants in Israel if it fires the right missiles and in the right numbers. And in exchange, what did it suffer? Virtually nothing. There was almost no meaningful retaliation. In fact, it's not clear that Israel itself retaliated at all. It might have been a proxy of the U.S. that mounted this embarrassingly ineffectual mission inside Iran. So what does that say to the, you know, the Muslim and Arab people in the streets? What it says is, you know, the Iranians are willing to put their national security at risk to defend the Palestinian cause and to defend international law in the region. So I think Erdogan's in real trouble. The Jordanian king is in a world of pain after directly assisting the Israelis to repel many of the drones and missiles that were fired at Israel. It's also been collaborating by allowing, it's basically set up a land bridge of goods into Israel and out of Israel to respond to the blockade of the Red Sea by Ansar Allah in Yemen. So it's clearly a collaborationist government, and there's a tremendous amount of anger in Jordan, and there's also building anger in Egypt. So the region right now is a powder keg, to put it simply, and it could explode at any time.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dimitri Lascaris. Dimitri is currently in Istanbul preparing to set sail with the Gaza Freedom Flotilla 2024 en route to Gaza. Expecting to be intercepted, I think, is the wise course. Years ago, you mentioned the Mavi Marmara. I talked with Kevin Nish, a local guy here that I know that you know. He was on the Marmara, was very heroic himself in the assault that, as you mentioned, took 10 lives of unarmed activists on that ship. What you're heading into the Maw, do you know, Dimitri, what kind of ship you're going to be on? And what kind of preparations have you made with respect to your family and trying to allay their fears? As you're a family man, you've got children, they must be worried. What do you say when they see you going forth on yet another risky venture like this?
You know, you try to explain what's motivating you to do it. And I think they understand that. They, you know, after many conversations that I've had with them about what is being done to the Palestinian people, not just since October 7th, but, you know, for years, decades prior to then, I think they understand that this is a deeply oppressed people. I think they completely understand how complicit Western governments and the Canadian government in particular are. But of course, they want to see their father be put at risk. And, you know, to some degree, they've tried to dissuade me from going. My partner, Farida, the first time I did this in 2018, when I appendicitis on the boat prevented me from going all the way to Gaza, I had to be delivered to Algiers for an emergency appendectomy. But when I got on that boat, she was quite upset with me. This time, she's actually quite supportive. I think she's so appalled by what she's seen that she understands that this is something that I should do.
Well, the news by day gets worse and worse. And you mentioned the mass graves outside of the hospitals that were razed to the ground. I mean, as if that wasn't enough. Now mass graves of patients and doctors and people presumably visiting their relatives in these places, bound and murdered execution style and thrown in mass graves that Israel claims were actually not them that did it, but that they're, I don't know what their story is now this time. Incredible. The Canadian government is lecturing, meanwhile, other countries on on human rights while standing mute in the face of what's going on in Gaza.
Yeah, you know, I tweeted about this recently. When I read about the mass graves at the hospitals, I was reminded of Bucha, you know, the suburb of Kiev in Ukraine, where I think it was dozens of people were found dead, shot. Many of them had their hands bound. And our august prime minister immediately came out and accused the Russians of war crimes, even though There had been no independent investigation. There were people who were contesting the Ukrainian version, military experts like Scott Ritter. He was looking at the evidence, was saying he thought that this was, in fact, far-right militants in the Ukrainian army and police who were retaliating against residents of Bucha who had been collaborating, in their view, with the Russians while the Russians were there. It really was unclear what had happened. And even the Ukrainian government at the time admitted that they hadn't even determined the cause of death of the people they found dead. And here was Justin Trudeau, I think he was in Britain at the time, on the international stage proclaiming that this was evidence of Russian war crimes. Here, he's not even calling for an investigation. He's been, as far as I know, completely silent. This man could not care less about Palestinian lives. And frankly, I don't think he cares about Ukrainians either. I think the only reason why he jumped on that bandwagon was because he is committed to the neoconservative Washington project of Western hegemony. And Russia is a geopolitical rival. So when there's any indication that, you know, Russia or some other China or Iran has engaged in potential human rights abuses, they jump all over it. Trudeau and all these other vassals of the United States and Biden himself, without waiting for any investigation, independent or otherwise. But when it's the Israelis, not only do they not demand an independent investigation, but they basically take the Israelis' word for it. Whatever the Israelis say happened is treated as gospel, even though the Israelis have been proven over time to be pathological liars. I think the gig is up, Chris. You know, people can see now that Western governments have absolutely no integrity, no moral authority whatsoever, and frankly, they are utterly depraved because they are supporting this genocide, supporting it, not simply complicit. They are participating in the perpetration of this genocide.
Well, and profiting from it as well, I would venture. Yes. Meanwhile, our foreign minister, Melanie Joly, or Genocide Joly, as she's commonly known in this country, is criticizing Iran and the Republican Guard for their, quote, human rights abuses and blatant disregard for human life. So, and turning a blind eye to, as I mentioned to her, Israel's National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir's statement that they should be implementing the death penalty in Israelis' overcrowded prisons to alleviate that overcrowding. Good luck, Dmitry. Good luck to you and to all of the people on this dangerous and necessary journey. And I do look forward to our next conversation.
Me too. Take care.
All right. And I want to also thank John B. Quigley and tell you that's all I got for this week. Until the next time. Thanks again, Dmitry.
See you, Chris.
Wherever someone supports Palestine, they've got something to say. If it's a gathering in Glasgow or a conference in Berlin, these livid lawyers will make sure that censorship will win. They've even got a charity and a troll farm too. And they don't care if you're a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew. UK Lawyers for Israel intends to turn the tide to advocate for the state committing genocide. If you cry out against the slaughter, that could be their cue. Their next target might be you. They took the Labour Party, centered it in their sights, and accused all the best of them of being anti-Semites. They took the best professors and they got them fired. They took former Supreme Court judges, said that they were liars. If you're afraid to speak out, the roots of that fear may result from a campaign intended to create that atmosphere. If you're feeling threatened, the reason why could just be the lords and ladies of UKLFI. UK Lawyers for Israel intends to turn the tide to advocate for the state committing genocide. If you cry against the slaughter, that could be their cue. Their next target might be you. I woke up one morning with an email in my inbox.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.